Welcome to the Fourth Age, a Wheel of Time podcast brought to you by DragonMount.com.
The Wheel of Time is an epic fantasy series written by Robert Jordan. There are currently 11 novels in the main series as well as one prequel novel.
This podcast is dedicated to discussing and enjoying the monumental work of fiction that is the Wheel of Time.
If I think Samael is really buff.
No, we're not going to bring that back.
I think Samael was pretty buff.
Samael was really buff.
Samael was pretty buff.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 52 of the Fourth Age, a Wheel of Time podcast brought to you by DragonMount.com. There will be spoilers.
Spoilers? What's a spoiler? I don't even have that kind of car.
Hi, of course, I'm Andrew Gillis, and with us this week we have Lee Butler from the reread on tour.com.
Welcome to the podcast. This is Virginia. Happy to be here as always. And we also have with us Jesse and Amir. Say hello, guys.
Hi, everybody. Great to be here.
How's it going?
Doing great. We're grateful that you're able to come on with us today, Lee. We had a lot of... Is it Lee or Lay? I want to make sure I'm not butchering your name.
It's Lee. Yeah.
Okay, Lee. Well, we're really happy that you were able to join us for this podcast. I must apologize in advance and send you a list of questions, but none of us ever got to it, and I didn't even get to send the other guys the request for it until about 4 o'clock this afternoon. I thought, well, there's not much point now.
That's okay. We'll just wing it. It's all good.
Okay. Well, I guess first off, perhaps you can tell us a little bit about yourself, what your connection with Tor is, how you got started doing the read-through of the Wheel of Time, and if you have any particular comments on it that you'd like to start us off with.
Okay. So, do you want the long version or the short version?
Any version you like.
Okay. Well, it all started back in the day. Now, around, I was in college. And I'd been reading fantasy for, you know, my whole life or whatever, but I'd never read The Wheel of Time. And this random person at the bookstore was like, oh, you're looking for fantasy? Why don't you try Eye of the World? And I was like, okay. And so I started and, of course, got completely addicted and read, like, when I started, it was like 1997 or something. Yeah, Crown of Swords had just come out in paperback. So I read the first 7 books in about... like 5 seconds flat. So yeah, it was really bad for my grade point average that semester, and it was really sad. And I was kind of peripherally aware of this whole internet thing, but you know, I still didn't really get it. Like, I was aware peripherally that the university had given me email, but like, I didn't really get any of it. But I started kind of just fumbling around. And I stumbled upon the internet, and I didn't even really understand what it was. I stumbled into the RecArts SF-written Robert Jordan group, or RefWord, as it's typically abbreviated, and promptly made a huge ass of myself, and then, you know, got over myself and started participating. And it just turned into this whole thing where, you know, I made a lot of really good friends there and blah, blah, blah. And I was on there for a few years, and then Pam Korda, who was one of the big kind of, she was the maintainer of the Wheel of Time FAQ, which is, you know, I'm pretty sure most people are, who are in the fandom, at least heard of it, which is this, it's this huge document that was built out of the Robert Jordan news group, basically, like, for, you know, answering all these questions about, you know, who killed Asmodian and what is exactly the whole deal with all this strange things going on, who killed Adelius Nispan and blah, blah. He'd been maintaining it for a few years, and then when Winter's Heart came out, which I think was in 2001?
That sounds about right, yeah.
Yeah, I think that was when it came out. And she was about to get her PhD. So she was in dissertation hell, basically. So I asked her at one point, I said, hey, you know, I know you're dealing with all your, but do you want any help updating the fact? And somehow that turned into me taking the FAQ over.
Oh, cool.
And I'm not really sure how that happened. She was like, hey, here you go. And I was like, okay. So I ended up taking over the FAQ and doing the updates for the next couple of books. Then a lot of crap happened, but two most significant things that happened were Crossroads of Twilight came out about a month after Hurricane Katrina happened. And at the time, I was living in Los Angeles, but I grew up in New Orleans, and all of my family you know, most of my family lives in New Orleans, and so it was kind of a crazy time, and there was a whole lot of upheaval that I'm not going to go into it was just a really wacky, crazy time. And at the same time, the news group was in the process of dying for various reasons. A lot of it was just kind of because of internal strife. The discussion there had gotten very political and very kind of polarized, and for various reasons, people started drifting away. And plus, Crossroads of the Twilight was probably the least popular book that came out in the Wheel of Time series, and a lot of people were very disillusioned with the series and were pretty much convinced it wasn't ever going to end. And so a lot of stuff happened. And so, long story short, I actually kind of fell away from the fandom for a while, not because I didn't still like the series, but because my own personal life was just so screwed up and had so much going on that I had to make a choice. I basically had to decide what was going to go and what was going to stay. And so it ended up that the facts never got updated for Knife of Dreams. I'm sorry, you know what? I said Crossroads for them, Knife of Dreams. Knife of Dreams came out a month after Katrina. So it never got updated for that because I had to make a choice about what I was going to do. And updating the fact was a huge task that each time I had done it took me months to do. I mean, I don't know if you've ever gone through the whole thing, but one of my friends, Stephen Cooper, who actually helped me proofread it the last time I updated it, he said that he had actually printed out the entire fact, and he said it came to almost 500 pages.
Yeah, not surprised.
Yeah, so basically it's like its own novel, basically. and it was one of those things where I felt really bad about it, but, you know, it was one of those things where I had to make a decision. Well, so, okay, time goes on, and I had made a lot of friends because of the news group, and one of those friends was Kate Neptune, who now currently does the Lord of the Rings reread going on tour.com right now. And yeah, I've been keeping in touch with people mostly through LiveJournal after the news group kind of fizzled out. And Kate contacted me one day about in like December of last year and said, "Hey, I'm doing the Lord of the Rings reread on tour.com, and they're looking for someone to do a Wheel of Time reread because Brandon Sanderson has, you know, that was basically right when the announcement about Brandon Sanderson had gone out that he's going to be finishing Wheel of Time series and so forth." So she said they're doing a reread kind of leading up to the release of the next book. And they asked her for suggestions, and she decided to see if I was interested. And I thought about it, and I was like, no, I knew it was going to be a huge time commitment, but at the same time, it was kind of like my life was in a much more even keel than it had been before. And also, it was one of those things where I really kind of missed being involved in the fandom because Wheel of Time had always been one of those things that had just, I mean, honestly, it changed my life in a lot of ways. So I made friends that I would never have made otherwise, and I, you know, did things that I never would have done otherwise. And so I kind of felt like this was something that I should maybe do. And so I got in touch with people at Tor, and pretty much that was it. And we just got started doing it. So there we are.
Well, that's great. That's really great.
Can we now hear the long version of the story?
That was the long version, Asmodian. No, a lot of people have said the same thing that you did, that the Wheel of Time has basically really changed their lives. Yeah, so it's interesting to hear you say that, because we've all discussed the same thing and come to the same conclusion. You, apart from the book itself being so influential in so many ways, just as you said, you meet people you never would have met, you do things you never would have done, and yeah, I would have never been doing a podcast.
Exactly. Well, you know, I went to Vegas for the very first time because of the Wheel of Time.
Really?
You know,
okay.
That whole thing is on the internet for anyone who cares to find it. And I've just made friends with people who I've been friends with now for, you know, over 10 years that otherwise I would never have known. And it's a really awesome, cool thing. And it's not like anything else that I've had happen to me in my life, you know. So, I mean, just this past couple of weekends, I had a friend come and visit me from Chicago, and I have all these people in Chicago. Basically, there's a lot of cities now that I could go to that I don't necessarily have any connection with, and I can call a couple people up and say, hey, I'm going to be in, you know, Chicago or Amarillo or, you know, Brisbane or whatever, and there are people there that I know because of the Wheel of Time. So it's a really neat thing for me.
It is. Are you active on any of the fan sites, like, well, obviously Dragon Mount or Tarvalon.net or any of those? Because a lot of people have the same experience finding other, you know, finding friends and being able to go places and, you know, stay with people and so forth because of the Wheel of Time.
Yeah, well, my participation was pretty much limited to the news group initially. And then once my life kind of exploded and things like that, I kind of fell away from not just fandom, but the internet. And so I was kind of absentee for everything. So, and then, you know, I started the tour thing, and honestly, that takes up so much of my time that I really don't have a whole lot. I mean, like, I'll poke around on things every once in a while, but my participation in other websites is actually really limited. And it's not because I don't want to. It's because I literally don't have the time.
You can spend hours doing that, I know.
Well, we started out with the intention of finishing all 11 books currently published before The Gathering Storm came out in November. So if you go through and you look at the first few, you know, especially the Eye of the World and the first couple of rereads that I did, they were going at this completely breakneck pace because I had actually just kind of sat there with a calculator and figured out how many pages I would need to get through per post in order to finish all of them by November. And then it turned out that that was actually kind of killing me, and that basically I was spending anywhere from 25 to 35 hours a week just doing the blog.
Wow.
And
I also actually have a full-time job.
Oh, my God.
So I was kind of putting in the equivalent of, like, 80-hour weeks.
Yeah.
And that was really not sustainable. And then, of course, they made the announcement, I think, in, like, March or April. I can't remember. Or it must have been March because it was before JordanCon, about the fact that they had made the decision that it wasn't going to be just one book. It was going to be three that Brandon was going to do. And so, and then I was like, you know what? I kind of looked at it and I discussed it with the people at Tor, and I said, you know, given that the whole thing is not even going to be finished with the new one that's coming out, I don't really see the benefit in trying to kill myself to finish everything before it even comes out. So I made the decision that I was just kind of like scale it back and, you know, stretch it out a little bit more, basically, and spend a little more time on it, which I think is actually better. I mean, most people have told me that they kind of agree that the slower pace is better because I can spend more time and talk about it more. And, you know, as we can tell, I'm not friends with brevity.
I've never met brevity personally.
I me and verbosity, you know, we're like, so I think it's a better thing. It's better for me because I can actually, you know, occasionally have a life, and it's better for the quality of the rereads, I think. So, yeah.
Yeah. What was that game, that text game that they had in the 90s, Zork, was it? I always related to that because you could set the thing to maximum verbosity, and everybody always teased me that I had been born set to maximum verbosity. So
I love that game, the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy game.
Yeah.
Is that what you're talking about? Yeah, I love that game. That was like my first computer game.
Yeah, and there's everybody's pretty much
no
first
idea
computer
what
game.
We're talking about now.
You're too young, honey.
You can actually go and play it online now. There's like a website where they have it as like a Java applet or something, and you can actually play it.
What was it called?
It was The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. It was based on the book by Douglas Adams.
Okay. And now there's
you
a game online, and there was a game online?
Yeah.
He's going to get eaten by a GRU immediately.
Yes.
Oh, I'm probably going to go and...
You're in a maze of pussy corridors all alike.
Oh, my God, I've forgotten about that. I've spent too many hours there.
Ultimately, he died of dysentery. So, you know, one of the two.
Oh, my God.
Wow, I'm really showing off my geek cred right now, aren't I?
Yeah, me too. Sorry about that. I am the biggest guilty party in taking our podcast way off topic, and I confess, and I really try to restrain myself, but I just can't. I'm horrible. I backed into this too. So.
I forgot what we were talking about originally, though.
The time consumption, and I could totally understand that, you know, reading the books and then writing a blog about it. I mean, my life has been so berserk, I've actually had a hard time keeping up with just the blog posts. So I can totally relate to what you're saying. It's ridiculous to expect that to be done by November. That was really unbelievable.
Hey, Virginia, how many of the blog posts have you actually read?
I'm probably a book behind. I'm behind. I'm behind on everything in my life.
I've read all the blog posts through the ending of A Shadow Rising, and with The Fires of Heaven, I'm just waiting until Lee gets done with it. Then I just put it all in one Word file and I read it. Of course, it's going to come out of the book itself.
Oh, wow.
I've discussed this with Lee, actually. I don't know if you'll recall, but when we met a couple months back, I told you that all your blogs, they can amount to a book in themselves.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I have absolutely no doubt.
You're not a friend of brevity. So.
No, I am not a friend of brevity. Brevity and I do not speak. But, it's very funny to me to read kind of how they evolved because, like, when I first started, I was really much more brief.
Yes, I remember.
And then I just started kind of getting longer and longer and longer and longer. And now it's kind of like I can't seem to dial it back. So I figure, well, you know, people don't seem to be complaining about it, so I'm just going to let it go. So.
I don't think it would be doing justice to it to make it too brief because there's such a rich fabric of, you know, the whole world of the Wheel of Time. You can't be brief discussing it any more than he was brief writing it.
I mean, that's the whole problem is because, you know, I'm trying to recap these chapters and there's so many little, like, nuances, like a line here and a line there. And I'm like, oh, but I got to put that in. So it's actually incredibly difficult to – it actually takes me more time to recap the chapters than it does for me to actually do my commentary about them. Because, you know, the commentary is very much, it's just me talking. I'm just like, la, 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 and I just say whatever is in my brain. But the recapping is actually incredibly frustrating because I have to try and make decisions. Okay, I have to cut at least a little of this out. I can't just sit there and, like, rewrite the chapter. So it's...
Yeah, I have to figure out how to summarize it.
Yeah, and it can actually be very difficult because, especially, like I was talking about that, like especially like with certain characters that he writes, like whenever there's a Nynaeve POV, for example, I'm just like, oh, crap, because her brain, her thought processes are like walking through a labyrinth, you know, and she just twists and turns on a dime, and it's funny, and it's great, and I enjoy it, but, like, it's incredibly annoying to try and recap, because she changes her mind, like, 16 times in 3 lines, you know, so it's very funny to me, but fortunately, there are usually very long descriptive passages, which I can always leave out, so...
There was a thought I just had as you were saying that, being as familiar with the series as you are, I know a lot of us here in the podcast are on our, you know, multiple digit rereads of the series as we're preparing for the 11th book. Do you ever run into the problem that there is a passage that you either know really well or you know essentially what happens in it and you really have to, like, force yourself to read more closely lest you miss something along the way?
Oh, yeah. There's a couple of places, especially, like, you know, when I get to my favorite bits, which were the ones that, you know, I would do the skip-around reread where I wouldn't reread the whole thing. I would just read my favorite parts. And actually, one of those is just past, the one that I just did, which was the Battle of Cairhien, where... you know, Matt finally, you know, acquires the proto band of the Red Hand because that's always been, like, one of my favorite parts of Fires of Heaven. So I've read that, like, well, way too many times. So when I reread it, it was one of the things where it was like, I was kind of thinking to myself, well, I don't have to recap this. Everybody knows what happens here. And then it was like, no, actually, probably not everyone has reread it 1,500 times like you have, idiot. So I have to remind myself not to skimp on it. So the irony is that I'm tempted to skimp on the parts that are my favorite parts. I don't know. It's weird.
That makes sense. I mean, it's only natural because you do feel that everyone should have the favorite. But
why doesn't everyone have this part memorized? I do.
I know. Well, it just becomes such an integral part of your history almost. You know, it's like, how can anybody not know that? It's like what, you didn't hear about 9/11? Oh, okay.
Okay, well, fine. You're odd. Okay. There are actually parts that I can almost kind of quote. I prefer you didn't call me on that because I'll probably screw it up. But basically, I can, you know, there's parts that I know really well.
I think the scariest thing to me on my rereads has been lately that I find as I'm going through the book, I've read through it so many times that, and I'm so embarrassed because sometimes I just forget stuff, but as I'm reading along, I find that I'm getting ready to turn the page and I'm completing in my mind the next few sentences. I'm going, oh my God, you have read this way too many times. It's like,
right?
I know what he's going to say exactly before I turn the page because I've read it 100 times. Mm-hmm. Well, not 100, but I never exaggerate. At least a billion.
Well, I have to, actually add to that. I've been inspired to start a reread of my own basically because of the blog and thinking I can maybe finish all 11 books before the 12th book comes out, regardless of if it's the last one or not. I figured I don't have to make any commentary so I can reread it in that time frame. No, I don't think so. Other things get in the way, but I mean, I can't quote anything, but having read the blog, I'm suddenly coming to scenes and, oh, I remember Lee's recap mentions this. And then I'm like, I remember this conversation now.
So maybe your blog will end up being like the concordance to the Wheel of Time or something, you know?
I really hope not, because there's been a couple of them where I was just like so punchy when I wrote them.
Gee, that's never happened to any of us. A lot of times we're so punchy when we record.
It's very funny because the way that the blog gets updated is that I basically have to put it up and then like notify Pablo and Tori that it's going up. And so they are pretty used to getting emails from me at like 3:00 in the morning going, I'm sorry, I'm done, okay. You know, and it's sad.
Okay, well, my burning question is, and I'm just going to jump ahead of everybody here and try, and after that I'll try not to monopolize. My big question is, have you uncovered any new insights or revelations as you've been going through your reread? Has anything just popped out at you like, wow, I didn't even think of that before? Because you're looking at it in a new way, going through it the way you are.
Oh, totally. Yeah, I mean, well, first of all, I think I said this at some point, you know, on the blog, which was that I've reread these, like, you know, however many times, but there's a difference between reading something and then sitting there and going through it basically line by line because I'm recapping it, you know, and so I'm sitting there reading it to make the decision of what to take out and what to put in and what I'm going to say about it and everything like that. So that really does change how you look at the text. There's been certain things. Well, I mean, there's like the totally boneheaded things, like things that everyone knew, and then for some reason I just never noticed. Things like the fact that Tom was obviously the one who assassinated Galdrian. Well, everybody knew that. Somehow my dumb ass just totally did not realize it. And it was not
until... Oh, everybody doesn't, though. I run into people all the time that go, really? Where did it say that? I'm going, no, well, it doesn't.
He doesn't come out and say, oh, guess what? Hi, Tom just killed Galdrian. But it's really obvious if you actually sit there and read it. But
yeah.
I think I said it in the recap. I was like, oh, my God, he totally killed Galdrian. Galdrian, all these people are like, yeah. That's like, well, I'm sorry, I just never noticed before. But there's been other things, too, like... in this book in particular, because in The Fires of Heaven, because The Fires of Heaven is one of those books that whenever I reread it, I tended to skip huge chunks of it and only read the good bits, as far as I was concerned. And, you know, like the Battle of Kyrian and certain other things, and like the end, of course. So I'm noticing a whole lot of things now that I noticed, but I didn't really pay much attention to, you know, especially the whole thing about Nynaeve and the whole circus arc, which, you know, has always been kind of a point of contention for a lot of fans because a lot of people just loathe it and think it's such a waste of time. And I used to kind of agree with them, but now that I'm kind of rereading it in such depth, I'm just, like, giggling my ass off while I'm, you know, recapping these chapters because Nynaeve is just killing me, you know? And it's one of those things where it's like, a lot of people really don't agree with me on this, and that's fine. They're totally, you know, they're totally entitled to their opinion, and I can totally understand why they wouldn't. But I mean, I'm just sitting here snickering the whole time, you know, and I don't think that I had necessarily gotten quite that much. I hadn't been quite that tickled about it on previous rereads. And then there's the whole Asmodean thing, which is I had never paid as much attention to him as I am now. And it's really kind of, he's much more interesting to me this time around, you know.
Do you think perhaps because you're paying so much closer attention, you might be able to actually figure out who killed him by the end of your recap of this book?
Yeah, RJ thought it was so obvious that he wasn't even going to mention it, remember?
Right, no, I remain mystified by that because I'll tell you what, one of the things that took me the longest to do out of the whole Wheel of Time fact, the single thing that I spent the most time doing was updating the Who Killed Asmodean section. Because, I don't know if you've ever gone and looked at that article. It's ridiculous. It's like 1,000 miles long.
Yeah, it is. I have looked at it.
It's completely insane, in fact. I have actually spent a retarded amount of time kind of sifting through different people's theories of what exactly happened and why Asmodean was killed and who did it and la, la, la. And the thing is that I spent so much time on it and I looked at it in such depth that it all started kind of, how do I put this? It started kind of just all planing out, which meant that it was all kind of equal, which I was like, you know, any of these people could have done it because if you go long enough, they've all acquired enough evidence that you could legitimately say that they all could have done it. Now, I don't really believe that, but one of the things
that a group that killed
him. I just think it was a whole posse. I think like 14 people showed up and killed him.
It was you plural, not you singular, right?
Like, you, what the hell are all you guys doing here? You know, but
go ahead, this is my wine cellar.
I like it.
I love it. I think that's my solution. They all did. They all did it.
It sort of reminds me of that scene where the Aes and I are discussing the beginning of talks with Elida and everything, and he refers to them discussing it and going over it, where every point is chopped so fine that it all becomes nothing, and you have to start over again.
Seriously, it's really like that. I mean, it got to the point where it was like, you know, I really don't freaking know. I mean, there's a few people who it's obvious they didn't do it, but, like, you can make a compelling case for at least, you know, 4 or 5 different characters. And so, and Pam actually kind of summed this up, but Pam Corda, my predecessor on the Wheel of Time fact, she kind of said, you know what, at this point, I don't care who killed Asmodean. So it's kind of like, I can kind of see the stress-relieving advantages in having that attitude.
I think someone can make a killing, a literal killing, on T-shirts saying, I killed Asmodean.
There you go. There you
Someone
go. There you go.
On Dragon Mount.
Oh, and now that we can go, Michael Jackson killed Asmodean. There you go.
Well, you know what? You could probably make a compelling case.
Actually, I know exactly who killed Asmodean. It was Robert Jordan.
Yeah, it was Robert Jordan. And, you know, but the thing is that I kind of just kind of cultivated a whole objectivity kind of stance toward it because I didn't choose one because then that way I could more easily be objective when presenting everybody else's theories.
Yeah, you know? That's true.
So when it comes to that section in your blog, in your reread blog, are you just going to link to the fact page on it?
Oh, you, there
you go.
That I am. I was like, basically, I'm going to put a big disclaimer in front of that chapter, and I'm going to say, okay, everyone, click on this link, read it, then come back and talk. Because they're, you know, the legwork, it has been done.
There you go. Yeah.
So, you know, but it was really interesting when I went to JordanCon because, well, it was interesting for many reasons, but one of the more interesting things was the dinner that we had kind of before the whole thing got started with, you know, Jennifer Liang and, you know, all the organizers and everything, and Harriet and Tom Doherty and Brandon Sanderson were there. And, of course, Matt Hatch was there, who runs, I'm blanking on the name of his website, but he runs one of the websites that specializes in conspiracy theories for Wheel of Time. And he's going to be upset with me that I can't remember the name of it. Ah. But he's a very huge, like, he loves to talk about who killed Asmodian. It's, like, his favorite thing. And he managed to derail the conversation at the dinner to who killed Asmodian. And it was a really interesting conversation because it's a conversation that many Wheel of Time fans have had, but most of them probably have not had it with three people in the room who actually know the answer.
Yeah.
They have to keep it a secret.
So, and they, of course, so, you know, Brandon and Harriet are sitting there just being very quiet.
Yeah. Brandon's a very good secret keeper, we found, when we interviewed him. We couldn't pull anything out of it at all.
You see, now I'm wondering.
And we tried. We put him to the question, but, you know.
Brandon has promised that he will put it in the final book. But since then, Thor has announced that they're splitting it into three books. In which book is Brandon going to let us know?
Yeah.
Might be this one. It might be the one after that. It might be the one after that. We don't really know.
Well, that would be. I think it'll come up where it's most likely to, you know, it'll come up wherever it was going to come up in the book when it was one, wherever it goes with the flow. So we'll find out.
Yeah. I've got money right now, even odds, that it'll be, you know, A Memory of Light, Harmon Guyden, afterward, Grenson.
Oh, no.
By the way.
It'll be in one of the Outrigger novels yet to come. Yeah.
Three words. Grendel did it.
No.
Afterward.
I don't want to wait that long.
If he does it that way, I will drive to his house and clobber him with a stick.
Oh. Don't say that.
I doubt that will happen. I'm actually reading the Mistborn series, and I'm enjoying it thoroughly.
It was great.
I read those right before JordanCon, because I was originally going to interview Brandon while I was there, but that ended up not happening for a lot of reasons, mostly because both he and I separately were running around like maniacs the entire time, and so it just never ended up happening as far as logistics were concerned. Mm-hmm. But I did read them, you know, kind of in preparation for that. And I thought
they were great.
I really liked them, you know. I thought it was really cool what he was doing. You know, he was obviously, obviously the theme there was that he was taking all of the, you know, standard themes of fantasy and just kind of turning them on their head. Mm-hmm. So, and that was clearly the aim there, and it was really interesting to see how he did it. You know, I read them and I thought they were really well done, and I think I have a lot of confidence that he's going to do the series justice. You know, I don't think it's going to be as if Robert Jordan wrote them. You know, I think it's going to be partially Robert Jordan, and it's going to be and Brandon Sanderson. He's going to put his own stamp on it, but I think that's the better choice to have made.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I agree fully with that. I think he's going to do a fabulous job in there.
I'm really looking forward to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, me too. I was a little dubious at first, too, but honestly, after we were lucky enough to catch him on his L.A. part of his Mistborn 3 tour and interview him in person, and he totally allayed all my fears. He's got geek cred that is not to be believed. I mean, he can geek out with anybody on Wheel of Time, you know, just totally, and he's so enthusiastic. And he's so creative.
The YouTube or whatever that they had of the skit at JordanCon.
I haven't actually seen that.
I missed that. I was just devastated to miss JordanCon this year. I was just upset at anything, but I couldn't go.
Well, it's up online somewhere. I don't know where it is exactly, but if you get a chance to watch it, you can skip all the parts where I'm in it because it's horrible. But
I'll ask Jennifer to send us those parts particularly.
Oh, God. But Brandon was, I was actually, like, amazed because, you know, he was playing all the male Forsaken. He got to die, like, five times. And,
cool.
So, and he was, I mean, he totally got into it. He was just, he was such a ham. It was great, you know.
Yeah. He's great enthusiasm.
Oh, very, very enthusiastic. I really enjoyed meeting him. I actually got to spend a pretty good amount of time with him at JordanCon, and he's just a really cool guy. And so it gave me what they said there and what I've read gave me a whole lot of confidence that it's going to be something special, I think. Yeah, and I'm
I
not
think so, too.
That. I'm not just saying that because, you know, I'm associated with Tor. You know, it's because I really do genuinely believe that it's going to be something really cool, and I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, me too. I have to say one thing is that Jesse and I got to spend a little bit of time during the day with him, too, and we just had a great time with him, and we were lucky enough to be able to drive him around to a couple of his other appointments, one of which was at a school where he gave a talk about one of his children's books, the Alcatraz series, to a bunch of grade school kids. And I think that's when my respect for him just, like, tripled, which was already high, you know, at that point, because we'd already done the interview, and I was very impressed with his, you know, level of knowledge and his enthusiasm and his abilities. He's such a creative guy. But when he was talking to those kids, I thought to myself, this is an amazing individual. I mean, just, I think he probably changed some of those little kids' lives, you know, in many ways, not just trying to encourage them to be writers, but, I mean, he's imparting life skills to these kids. It was amazing. You know, so I have total confidence in his ability to pull this off. I don't know who else could do it, to be honest with you.
I think he's very capable, and Harriet made a good choice, is what I wanted to
say. Yeah. That was automatically inspired, I think. You know, that just, it had to happen for some, somehow it had to work out that way, and I just think it did. Maybe RJ was looking down and saying, look, you got to get this guy, I can tell. I don't know. It's kind of scary. But I think it's going to work. But did you get any other insights or revelations that you think, you know, can spring to your mind at this moment in time, or anything else that you want to tell us, you know, that appeals to you about what you've picked up in your read-through?
Well, there's a couple of things. I'm really interested to see, this is not a revelation so much, it's just kind of a speculation. I'm really interested to see what happens with the reread as we get into the later books, because the first seven books I kind of unequivocally love, you know, and it's really interesting to me because a lot of people seem to have very different reactions to the later and the earlier books based on when they actually started reading them, basically based on when they had to start waiting for books to come out. So, like, because I noticed that a lot of people have, like, in the comments, which, by the way, I do want to say for the record that even though I don't generally have time to actually comment on the comments, I do read them all. So, you know, it's very funny because I think a lot of the commenters think that I don't read them, and they're just kind of talking, and they're going, lee, la, 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 and I'm like, you know, I'm right here. I'm listening.
I'm standing right here.
Like, I'm right next to you. No, I'm kidding. But
comments?
Well, I have to confess, the only comment thread that I have not read in its entirety was the one where they all went completely insane, which was wondering, because I took a week off to go to JordanCon. And so, like, I took a week off so that I had, you know, time to go and recuperate and la, la, la. Well, they kind of just, like, lost their minds. And the comment thread, I think, got up to, like, over 800 before they finally just froze the comments on that thread. And so, like, and they warned me, don't go look at it.
Oh, no.
And I said, okay, I won't. So, I haven't read that one. But almost everything else of the comments, I do make a point of reading them all. But it's just one of those things where it's like, even with the slowed down pace, I spend, you know, 20, 25, sometimes 30 hours a week on this thing. And so it's kind of one of those things where, well, I could spend time actually doing the blog, or I could spend time commenting on it, and I figure most people would probably prefer if I wrote the actual blog.
So
please tell me you're not doing this as a volunteer. I hope they're paying you for this.
They are paying me. All the bloggers on tour are paid. So
that's a big chunk of time to spend as a volunteer.
I'm glad
they are. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's I did the FAQ all on volunteer work, but that was totally different.
You should ask to be paid based on how many comments you generate.
Oh no!
I don't live in that 800 one. Is a gold mine, huh?
Well, the Wheel of Time reread posts do kind of consistently rank as the highest
lead. Isn't it the most commented blog there is or something?
On the tour.com site, I think it might be, It's pretty impressive, not even including the madness that was that one particular thread.
I read the blog posts, and by the time I get to look at one, there's already 50 comments on it, so I can't even give it the time that I'd love to give it. I just can't go there.
Right. Well, no, and I understand that, but the commenters are great, though, because I often bring up kind of controversial topics and things like that, and I'm a sort of an opinionated person. I don't know if anyone's noticed. But so there's a lot of times where I've said things or, you know, things have been brought up where there could be, you know, the potential for some pretty ugly infighting. But they've mostly been, you know, very, very good about that for most of the time. You know, it's only been on occasion that things have gotten kind of a little hairy in there, but most of the time they're very good about it, and they're really great people. I mean, you know, like there's a lot of people who comment very regularly. I got to meet a few of them at JordanCon, and it's really cool, the little community that's kind of built up there. So I kind of regret that I really have the time to really kind of engage with them in the comments. But it's not because I don't want to. It's because I literally don't have time to do it.
Speaking of the commenters, who is R. Fife, and does he live on the web, on tour.com?
R. Fife is a fun guy. He was one of the ones that I met at FinCon, and it was actually...
I think this guy can write a blog of his own. He's comments on every single thing that comes out on tour.com, I think.
He's prolific. He's very engaged. But the funniest thing about him is that I met him without knowing I had met him at JordanCon, because Jason decided that we were going to pick someone random out of the audience to play Matt in the opening skit. And so we asked for volunteers, and, you know, he was like, this guy just jumped up and was like, me, 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 and, you know, it was really okay. So we gave him, he actually did, like, a better acting job than most of us without having ever seen the script before. You know, like, just totally off the cuff. And then it was only after that I found out that he was actually R. Fife.
Well, now Andrew's going to be really, really upset that he didn't make it there, because
seriously,
he would have wanted that. Yeah.
So I met him. I acted with him before I actually met him.
As you're going through your reread, are there any sections you mentioned you have to deal with your favorite parts and the parts that you're the most familiar with? Are there any parts that you don't look forward to when you go through the series, or that you know what's coming up and you don't want to have to really study that part?
That's what I was talking. Yes. Now you reminded me of the thing that I lost track of earlier. Yes. Because the thing that I was talking about was, I'm really interested to see what happens when we come up to the later books, because there are a lot of later books that I'm really not very fond of, and I'm actually really interested to see what happens when I get to The Path of Daggers, because The Path of Daggers is my least favorite of the
entire series. Is that the one without Matt, or is that the one with Matt?
That's the one without Matt, which is a huge part of the reason why I don't like it. But it is also because The Path of Daggers is, and again, it goes to my theory about where it is you have to start waiting for books, because The Path of Daggers was the first book that I had to wait for. So I think that was a huge part of it. And it was also because it had no Matt in it, and Matt is my avowed favorite character. And also, things get really crappy in there for Rand, and Path of Daggers is just by far my least favorite book, and it's probably the one that I have, other than Knife of Dreams, which, because that's the latest book, that's the one that I just generally don't reread at all. So I actually don't remember a great deal of what happens in Path of Daggers, except in a kind of broad general sense. And so I'm really interested to see what happens when I get to it, because am I going to hate it as much as I did before, or is it going to be like one of those things where I find more merit in it on a close reread than I did before, you know? So, because, I mean, like, there's only a couple of things that I specifically remember that happened in Path of Daggers. Like, for instance, there's the whole Bowl of the Wind sequence, which, like, most people are like, oh, God, kill me now. And also, there's the whole the thing that I remember most clearly about Path of Daggers is the part where the maidens beat the crap out of Rand. And I remember being pissed off about that part. Because it just, I was like, are you freaking kidding me with this, you know? And so, but I don't remember what led up to it or what was the result of it now. And so, like, I'm just really interested to see what my reaction is going to be when I get to that part.
I remember. Because, sorry, keep going. No, keep going.
No. I was basically
saying I was saying I remember being really, really angry at the end of Path of Daggers. I was like, turning back pages, looking for Matt somewhere, and maybe I'd missed pages. I was so pissed off at RJ at the end of that book.
You're like, no, we're not.
Exactly.
No, I was very angry about that. But see, like, I don't know. It's a different thing when you come at it from the perspective of, well, you know he's going to show up in the next book. So, you know, when you come to the end of it, realize there was no Matt in it, and you're going to have to wait, like, 3 years before you can get to the next book. Well, that's really annoying.
The thing is, in Crown of Swords, which is before Path of Daggers, if I remember correctly,
that's correct.
Matt gets a wall knocked over him while he's trying to rescue Oliver. And then the next book, he's living in the palace or something. How did he go from here to there?
Apparently what happened was the wall fell on top of him, and then somebody found him and brought him back to Tywin, and Tywin basically nursed him back to health.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know.
Yeah, he was already living in the palace, you know.
Yeah, he was already in the palace by the end of Crown of Swords, because Tywin kind of forcibly moved him in there.
It was so annoying that there was, like, this discrepancy of how did he get from point A to point B. I mean, I knew he was in the palace and whatnot, but, I mean, just the fact that they sort of glazed over it, they sort of skipped it. It's like that they skipped the part of showing us Tom actually killing Galadriel. You know, it probably would have been an awesome chapter to write.
Yeah, but, you know, personally, I don't have a problem with that, really, because, you know, there's so much that happens in these books that it's actually, you know, you do have to recognize at some point that he can't show you everything, you know, and so, and the fact is that since in the chronology of the books, Matt does spend the entirety of the Path of Daggers convalescing, which, you know, can't be all that interesting, I guess that, you know, it makes sense to leave it out of the book. Basically, I understand the reasoning for cutting Matt out, because, you know, I guess it's also kind of like a, you know, well, Perrin didn't get to be in Fire of Heaven, so there has to be a book where, you know, Matt doesn't show up. And then if you think about it, like, which book was it? It was Crossroads of Twilight, I think, where Rand hardly shows up. He's, like, only in one chapter.
Yeah, I remember that.
You know,
but I honestly didn't miss Rand that much.
That was the thing. That was really sad. I was like, you know what? Rand's not hardly in this book. Oh, well.
I think that actually leads into something that I think RJ is doing on purpose. I think he's creating a lot of anger and resentment towards Rand's character because he's becoming so hard and so distant, and he's creating this forced resentment in readers against Rand, I think. And I don't know why it is, but I think he does it on purpose.
I can kind of see that. I can see that. I don't know if I necessarily agree with it, but it's definitely a big thing that Rand definitely kind of goes off the deep end and, you know, at several points. But I think that's actually another reason why I didn't really like Path of Daggers, because kind of Path of Daggers in a lot of ways was kind of his low point. That was where he screws up like a number of times, does some really stupid shit, and you just want to smack him around, and then then you get angry because the maidens did smack him around, and, you know, it's all very confusing.
As opposed to the Dragon Reborn, where he goes off the deep end and like, appears for the whole book?
Yeah,
well.
But, you know, but he's not there being off the deep end. He's, like, off somewhere where we can't see him being off the deep end.
Yeah.
You know, it's like when you have to watch him go off the deep end is when it's really annoying.
Yeah. That's one of my favorite parts, when Davern Bashir just takes him down off of his horse when he lets Calendar run wild and everything. I thought, you know, it takes a lot of nerve to knock the Dragon Reborn to the ground and slap him around when he's wielding Calendar in all its mighty glory, you know. That's pretty gutsy.
Bashir is a really cool character. I do like him a lot. But
Bashir is one of my favorites.
Yeah, he's not one of my favorites, but he's a really cool guy. I mean, I do remember the conversation that he had with Rand, where they talk about, you know, he talks about serving under this general who was a complete nut bar and made them cut down a forest of trees because they thought he was staring at him, you know, and things like that. And
do you have any idea how long it takes to bury 17 oak trees or whatever?
Yeah, right. And I was like, oh, dude, that sucks. So if you can deal with that, you can probably deal with the Dragon Reborn, I guess. So, but to go back to Jesse's question, that I am really interested to see how I handle Path of Daggers, because I don't know, it may end up turning into me just having a full-on rant for, you know, 15 posts or whatever. Like,
Lee's blog post where she bags on, you know, Crossroads of Twilight for 85 blog posts.
I don't know, though, but again, like, what I've noticed on this reread is that because I'm reading everything so very closely, there's a lot of stuff that I'm having more appreciation for that I didn't before. So it's entirely possible that I'll get to Path of Daggers and we'll be like, wow, this, okay, so this is kind of neat, you know. I honestly don't know.
Do you still have the experience where you'll be going through and you'll read something and it'll just slap you in the face and you'll be like, how did I miss that? I had that experience last year when I was reading through, and I'm terrible. I tend to read the books, like, in a chain all the way through, and so they sort of blur together. Sometimes I don't remember which book what thing is in because it's all one thing to me anymore. But there was one point where they're in the Stone of Tyr, and Lanfear is bantering back and forth with Rand, and she's saying, well, why did you leave Kalendor? You know, now anybody can pick it up. It's not just you, et cetera, et cetera. And then she goes, there are two Sangreal more powerful than that can be used by men. One I know still exists, and then he just drops the whole thing. And I thought, oh, there's another one. I missed that every single time I read it. I must have reread it 8 times before that. I never caught that. And I'm still wondering what that other male Sangreal is. And so I'm constantly finding things. I'm like, how many times do I have to reread this before I actually get everything? You know.
There's a lot in there. Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, I haven't reread that yet again, but did she state that it's actually another male Sangreal, or is it just another Sangreal?
Yeah,
nope,
the line is, there are two more powerful that can be wielded by men. One I know of still exists.
Right.
And that's where the conversation basically ends.
And they never bring it up again.
Huh.
So it's out there somewhere, and I guess maybe we'll find it in time for Charm and Gaiden. I don't know.
Unless it's broken.
Well, I don't know. I'm wondering if that's the one that, you know, remember when the girls were looking for something that would help the Dragon Reborn? They were searching with Need and Teleron Riad, et cetera, et cetera. And they first ended up in the White Tower, and they said, well, we'll never be able to get anything out of there. So they continue on, then they find the Bowl of the Winds. I'm wondering, perhaps that was the thing that they were looking for originally. Maybe it's, you know, hidden in the White Tower. I don't know. You could go crazy trying to figure out all the convolutions in these books. Only RJ really knew for sure, I guess. And maybe Brandon and Harriet know.
Yeah. I remember one of Lee's blogs, speaking of Lee's rants, though, that really had me amused, was in The Shadow Rising, when Fael and Perrin go through the ways and Perrin
bangs
Fael. I just laughed my ass off reading that blog post of yours and your reaction to it. Really? He spanked her?
Spank her again! Please, spank her again! Make her stop! That was my rant.
on that one. Yeah, I kind of lost my mind a little bit right there.
I thought that was so
but
funny, though.
I seriously had not really realized until I did the reread that he actually spanks her right there. Like, it never says it in so many words. You know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I tend to be, normally I'm sort of a speed reader, so I tend to, like, zoom through everything. But, mm-hmm. you know, like on this reread, I've been having to go line by line because I'm recapping everything. And I basically wrote exactly what my reaction was, which was like, wait, hang on. What just happened? Oh, my God. Like, I seriously kind of just said that out loud because I was just so astounded. I was like, you've got to be freaking kidding me. That's what happened? And I never noticed. And, you know, the commenters kind of went ape with it, so that was interesting.
Yeah. Oftentimes here on our podcast, we digress into discussing the possible movie or / TV series options for the Wheel of Time.
And
I have a question.
An endless subject.
Yeah, when you read through these books, do you have specific actors or actresses that you visualize in your mind as you visualize the characters?
Honestly,
anyone you'd love
really
to see in specific roles?
Honestly, I really don't. That's always been a perennial favorite discussion topic. They did, you know, endless iterations of it on the news group, and people would say, oh, well, I think blah should play blah, and blah,
mm-hmm.
blah. I've always had pretty specific images of at least a few characters, but I never specifically associated them with anybody real. Like, I never said, oh, Lanfear should be played by blah, blah, blah. I have a very specific picture in my head of what Lanfear looks like to me.
Mm-hmm.
But she doesn't necessarily correspond to anyone specific. It's a thing for me where, you know, I can kind of go with it. Like, people will say, oh, well, I think right now one of the big ones is that, and I don't agree with this one at all, but there are people who are saying that Megan Fox should play Lanfear. And I'm like,
oh.
Lanfear?
Yeah.
No.
Or like the younger version of her, like, you know, or whatever.
No. Maybe Min, but not Lanfear.
Yeah, and so like people say things like this. It's always interesting to me to read of what people who people think should play who, because it's always like I'll either go, okay, I can kind of see that, or I'll be like, what the hell are you thinking? You know?
Yeah. I'm sort of on the same page with you. I've never really picked out anybody. The only one that's ever stuck in my mind, and I don't even know if I thought of it, if I heard it from somebody else, I have totally got David Boreanaz as Logan in my mind. That's who I see now when I think of Logan. So I'm like, okay.
Really?
But that's the only one. I mean, I can't really, like you say, you have your own mental concept of what they look like, and I never really pin them to other real-life actors,
yeah.
you know.
Yeah, and you know, interestingly enough, the one that I cannot actually picture anybody at all is Rand.
I agree with you fully on that one, actually. It would be a tough role to fill because his features are so unique as well.
Yeah, and it's just one of those things where I have a very definite mental picture of him, but
mm-hmm.
I just can't picture anyone ever actually doing that justice. I mean, like,
yeah.
I just can't see it. I don't know, like, which is why I've always been sort of kind of secretly relieved that any kind of live-action version of it has never gotten off the ground.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I mean, yeah, it's one of those things where you do want to see it, but the chances of, you have to look at something like Lord of the Rings. Like,
I was just thinking, yeah.
Yeah, the Lord of the Rings trilogy, the movie imaging of it, it had its flaws, but it was, in my mind, about 97% awesome. And the chances, and that I really do regard that as being almost like a complete fluke. It was a fluke that they got that good, you know.
I'm not even sure Peter Jackson could do justice to to the Wheel of Time.
Oh, I don't think Peter Jackson could do anything after Lord of the Rings.
Well, I don't think Peter Jackson would touch it with a 10-foot pole. If he's smart, he won't. But, I mean,
yeah.
Like, you know, it's one of those things where I just don't see anybody being able to do justice to it. You know, if anybody ever does actually make it, I'll go see it. And,
oh, yeah.
And I'll probably be like, okay, cool. But, you know, it'll probably be at best sort of what the Harry Potter movies are, which is that I enjoy the Harry Potter movies, but at best they are kind of like illustrated companions to the books.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
You know,
I'm just thinking the same thing. That's so funny.
Yeah, it's just, it's one of those things where it's like, yeah, they're cool, but they don't do it justice, but they're fun, and I'll just go with it, you know.
Yeah, I like them for themselves, but, you know, when I first heard they were doing it, I thought, oh, there's no way they're going to be able to do this properly, and they didn't, but they're good in and of themselves if you just take them as something separate. I mean, it's sort of like fresh mushrooms versus canned mushrooms. You don't, they're not interchangeable. You have to like them for what they are or not.
Right? You know. You know what they're like? Did you guys ever have those things? Now, this is going to seriously date me, but you know those, they have those records that were like adaptations of famous books or whatever, and you could like put the record on and you could read along and like, you know, turn the page when the chime happens, you know, ding.
Oh yeah.
That's really what I kind of thought the Harry Potter movies were like. They were sort of like, turn the page when you hear ding, you know, and it was, they just left out all most of the stuff, but as long as you followed along, you could kind of get it, you know.
Yeah.
That said, I'm still going to go see the movie that comes out on the 15th, so. Anyway.
I'm almost wondering if they shouldn't do it, you know, in some sort of a CGI, or not animated necessarily, but some sort of a, you know, a non-actor form. I just don't know if there's any way in the real world that they could do it. I mean, I think probably Lord of the Rings stretched everybody's abilities in that respect to the max, and it was close, but not perfect.
There was a movie that came out in like 99 or 2000 called, based on the video game Final Fantasy. And
Final Fantasy, I was just thinking of that, yeah.
What, Advent Children?
Advent Children.
Yeah. Well, the funny thing was that I've actually seen Advent Children because I watched it at a friend's house, but I've never actually played Final Fantasy. So so it was really
honestly,
an interesting experience for me.
What I have done with anybody who hasn't played the game, the DVD actually has a feature where it kind of runs you very fast-paced through the plot line of the game, and then allowed just basically to catch anyone who maybe hasn't played it up. But yeah, I mean, I'll be the one to say I was the total geek who went, oh, they made a Final Fantasy VII movie in that. Since I liked Final Fantasy the game, I must go see the movie now.
No, I watched it at a friend's house, and I was like, yeah, I have no clue what's going on, but it was still funny. Like, the whole thing with the cell phone in the chapel made me crack up. No.
Oh, yeah.
But, I mean, even without knowing what the inside joke was, that was really funny. But basically, like, my whole exposure to Final Fantasy was, I had a roommate in college, he used to play it, and I would sit there and watch him breach your photos for, like, 300 years. You know, but other than that, I didn't really know anything about it. I was like, why are you playing a game where you have to breed giant chickens?
I was actually speaking of the movie The Spirit Within, the 2001 version.
Oh,
yeah.
That. Oh, that's different.
That film was totally CGI. I didn't see the other one, but the entire film is done in CGI, and it was really cool animation technique. Because it looks,
you know,
totally realistic, but it's all animation. Advent Children was better. It was the same deal.
It was computer generated completely through. But basically, their animation techniques got a lot better. There's a lot more fine detail, and it's a lot more fluid and as lifelike as you can probably get under the circumstances.
Okay.
Well, a lot of people think that the Spirit Within failed because it fell in Uncanny Valley.
Yeah.
Which I kind of agree with that, like, the more lifelike they were, the more people were creeped out by them. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
but I think that's probably the only way they'll be able to go, because even if they started, you know, they're going to have worse problem than Harry Potter did. By the time they finish the thing, any actor that they have is going to be like 20 years older. You know?
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
You can't do with Wheel of Time what they did with Lord of the Rings, which was film all three of them simultaneously and got around that problem. It never happened.
This would never
work. So maybe CGI or something is the way to go as that gets better and better, and then they can sit there and spend all the time they want on each one. They don't have to pay actors to hang around and, you know, massive extras and so forth and so on. I mean, CGI is expensive as heck, too, but compared to staging a live-action Wheel of Time, it would probably be a bargain.
I would definitely think so. Yeah. I mean, just in terms of budget, it wouldn't. I don't know. I don't see it working, honestly. Like, at best, I see them making, like, the first few, and then it kind of fizzles out, which I think is probably with the Narnia thing as well, you know, which
well,
is a real...
Well, honestly, with Narnia, like, has anyone actually read more than just The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe?
Oh, yeah. Are you kidding?
Yeah, long time ago, yeah.
When I was a kid, I got those for... I got the whole set, like, all seven. Mm-hmm. For like Christmas or something, and I read them so many times that my mother had to buy them for me again because all the books fell apart.
Well, that's real time.
Yeah.
I think I'm on my fifth or sixth paperback on most of them now. I just bought my third copy of Knighthood Dreams.
Oh yeah,
I just wear them out. Oh. I carry them around like loyal, unfortunately, so I beat them up a lot.
Actually, you'd mentioned earlier that obviously doing the reading is giving you a better appreciation for what Jordan has written. Before we started recording the interview, we were kind of talking back and forth. One of the things that we mentioned was Jordan's propensity for not killing his characters. With that sort of thing in mind, and that, has the really close reading given you a better appreciation of how Jordan writes certain pieces, or is there anything enhanced or changed about the way you look at the way the author himself was putting the narrative out?
Okay, well, one thing I did definitely notice, especially in the first book, which I think I mentioned a few times, was the descriptive passages, which, you know, I keep telling people, I was kind of surprised when I saw that a couple of commenters said that they haven't read the books, that they're just following along my blog, and I was kind of horrified because I was like, guys, no, don't do that, because I'm doing very detailed recaps, rather, but I'm leaving out an awful lot of stuff, and 90% of what I do leave out is the descriptive passages, which is something that Jordan is really good at. He kind of, it's one of those things you almost stop noticing until you go and you read somebody else, you know, like somebody who maybe does not have such a great grasp of descriptive imagery, and you're like, oh, okay, well, so that wasn't, yeah. But he really does have a gift for very vivid imagery and things like that, and that unfortunately is something that just gets left out of the recaps, you know, because like I'm not going to sit there and describe everything that, you know, like what does Kyrian look like, and, you know, what does the countryside look like, and la la la. But I think, you know, if you're just reading that and you're not reading along with the actual text, you're missing a lot of the what makes it good writing, you know, because I'm just kind of going by bullet points, like this happened, and this happened, and this happened.
This is not the sort of series that you can just go on the cliff notes, you know.
Well, you can, but I mean, I think you're missing out if you do. I think if you're strictly going by, you know, a recap, then you're missing out on what makes it not just a story, but actually makes it literature. And I think that's definitely what it is. He's got a very powerful grasp of how to write something that evokes the correct response in the reader, you know, especially when he kind of gets more esoteric and where things are happening. Like I said several times, like the last chapter of The Eye of the World, where he basically, you know, there's the big Titanic meeting with him and Beelzebub, and I'm like, guys, please go read this chapter because my recap of it does not nearly do it justice, you know? And so I did have a much more appreciation of that this time around because I tend to be a speed reader. I tend to skip over descriptive passages, which I think is bad. I don't think I should do that, but it's something that I do. I have an unfortunate tendency to do. And the other thing about it is that, and I just mentioned it in this past recap that I did, which is that he is really good at laying things out in a clearer manner, which is something that it's very easy to kind of not appreciate.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, it's like one of those things where it's like you only notice it if it's not there. But you can very clearly see where people are in relation to each other and what's happening in relation to each other. And that's actually harder to do than a lot of people realize, you know, especially when you're doing something really chaotic, like a battle scene or, you know, where lots of crazy shit happening, like people are in alternate dimensions and, you know, whatever. It's something that it's a little difficult to appreciate until you read somebody who doesn't really necessarily get that. And so you're like, wait, I have no idea where any of these people are in relation to each other, you know? And it's very difficult to figure out what's going on. And, like, action scene or whatever if you don't know how anything's impacting anything else. And I think that Jordan's really good at that. Does that answer your question, or was that not at all what you asked?
No, that's definitely good. Yeah, I basically had wanted to get that in since we had mentioned it before we had started podcasting the entire thing about Jordan's propensity for not killing characters and
those he does
coming back. And it worked in because, I mean, it is more, that conversation we were having was more about Jordan as a writer as opposed to the actual content of the series. And, yeah, so, I mean, you answered the question very well, actually.
Speaking of Robert Jordan's propensity to not kill off anyone and not letting anyone stay dead, another thing that's cropped up in forums and in the different podcasts and in some of the listener emails we've received is the series on who do you think will survive the last battle and who will not.
Oh, so, good topic.
What are your thoughts on that one?
Of the
main 10 characters you can think of.
Are you asking who I do think will survive or who I don't?
Who do you think?
Either way.
Rand. Survive or not?
Rand will die, but then he'll come back.
Okay, Matt.
Matt will survive.
We know that because RJ said that he was going to write a book about the life of he and Tuon. Matt and Tuon afterwards, so we know that he survives and Tuon does.
I honestly don't think that any of the main six, like the Supergirls and the Superboys, I don't think any of them are going to die. There's an outside chance, I think, that either Nynaeve or Elaine will die, but Egwene is definitely going to survive. All three of the boys are going to survive, for sure. Logan is going to survive. Taim is going to die.
Glory coming.
What was that?
Logan has glory coming. Of course he survives.
Yes, he's got glory. He's good to go. He's good to go. and so is Tenobia, because that way Perrin gets to become king of Saldea. And let's see, Suwan is probably going to survive. Lianne probably is going to die.
Elida.
Oh, Elida's dead.
Oh, please, I think so.
I'll write a letter of protest if she doesn't die.
I'm gonna email Brandon and say specifically, please, could you please kill off Elida if she's not going to be already? Not that he'll listen to me, but
she needs to go. She needs to be on a bus. I think Elida should definitely die. A lot of the Aes Sedai are gonna die, I think, in the next book, because the whole invasion by the Shanshan thing is gonna happen. So I think a lot of them are going to be toast, actually. Sheriam's going to die. Sheriam's got death written all over her.
I've already got her marked out as one of the ones who's turned by the 1313. Everybody knows that's my favorite tick. I think she was turned.
Oh, I think so, too. I totally believe that that's what happened. But I think she's, like, fighting it or something. I don't really know what's going on with her. But I think that she definitely is being coerced. And she's I personally, my theory for her is that she's going to go out in a blaze of glory and, like, maybe take down Halima or something, you know, doing it.
What, like Ingtar,
really
Ingtar in The Great Hunt?
Yeah,
the noble death,
The noble redeeming death, I think, is going to be her thing.
Because there was that viewing of Minsk where she had the halo of blue and gold around her.
Yeah, which totally was
and,
like, she's like Saint Sheriam now, you know.
Yeah,
and,
it's like Logan's halo, so I think maybe, I don't know.
Yeah,
so I'm sorry, go on.
I definitely think she's toast. And let's see, who else? You can just name some random people. Logan's... Moraine is... Moraine's going to live. She's going to live and end up with Tom, and they're going to go off and be, like, you know, happy together. So Tom's going to live for, like, however much longer he's got. And Lan is going to live, and so is Nynaeve. And they're going to go off and be king and queen of Malkier.
Okay, that was my next question.
Yeah, they're going to live, definitely.
Min?
As far as Avienda and Min go, I think Avienda's probably definitely going to live simply because she's got to have four babies at some point. But Min is actually kind of up in the air. I think Min could actually die.
Because the big...
That would kill Rand, literally.
Oh, it would
figuratively
kill Rand. It would totally kill Rand.
Nobody
Elaena.
Would see it coming.
Yeah, Elaena is definitely dead.
Elaena's a dark friend.
I don't...
is.
I've decided she's a dark friend because
I think she's an idiot, but I don't
think.
Well, I agree with you there, but we're sort of split on that. I think Jesse believes that Alana's a dark friend too because she thinks she's the one that opened the way gate to let the after Loial and Gaul closed it to let the Trollocs back into the Two Rivers.
Thane said that he did that, or not Thane, Slayer did that. One of the two did it.
Yeah, Slayer said something about it in a dream too. That's true.
He actually tells Perrin, "You would have been so proud if you'd known how many Shadowspawn died at the gate before it got opened again." So I mean, like,
yeah, but he doesn't say he actually opened it.
No, he doesn't say he actually opened it. And then Alana, Jesse, you should defend your theory.
These theories, they abound. I don't know.
Come on, Jesse, tell us.
Okay, well, my theory is based on my last reread, the one before this last one, which I pretty much was trying to determine who does Perrin tell when he gets to the Two Rivers that he's actually locked the gate. And the only person that he actually tells who then disappears for long enough to have actually gone and unlocked it is Alana, is the only one who is essentially out of sight for long enough. If you remember, Loial is kind of set to, you know, sort of spy on her, and she disappears, her and one of her warders, for a time. And nobody really can account for where she was, and that's what led me to believe that she would be, being that she was the only one who actually gets informed that the gate is locked.
Yeah.
I don't think I have an addendum to that.
Okay.
My addendum to that comes from reading your blog and reread, because I haven't gotten to that in my own reread yet. But there's a point where she says to Perrin, and you quoted it in your thing, she hasn't come to the point where she will bond someone without their consent. And then she goes and she turns around and does that to Rand in the next book or something.
Yeah, but I don't know if you change your mind. That's not lying if you change your mind. No, she left that, but she changed her mind. That's not lying. That's prerogative.
She didn't lie, so she just hadn't quite come to that point yet.
Then she got there.
That's like the literal truth right there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I don't personally buy it, but, you know, I could be wrong, but, like, I personally think that I just think she's toast, because I think that that's definitely going to happen just because of the effect it will have on Rand, because he's still bonded to her. So
yeah.
I think that, you know, he's going to have the whole go crazy thing happen because she gets offed in some horrible way, and it'll be lots of drama.
I wonder if having the other three bonds, will shield him from that.
Dude, that whole situation is so screwed up. I mean, like, it's literally like a kitten got into a ball of string.
We did a whole podcast on that. All the links and the bonds and all the threads attached to him are, like, bizarre.
It's ridiculous. It really is. And now, it was either Crossroads of Twilight or Knife of Dreams, where they started having the whole color thing. The other Tiberian, and I'm like, what the bloody hell, guys? I mean, so now he's like mentally linked to Matt and Perrin as well, and I'm just like, holy crap, how many people?
And Moradin,
sees
Moradin's face.
It's ridiculous. So I'm like, no wonder he's crazy. He's got 16 people in there.
No wonder he's going nuts. No, he didn't have to go nuts anymore. The taint's gone. All right, so next one, not to survive. Who do you think, Catswain?
Oh, interesting. I think that she's got a 50-50 chance. Because she's, like, from what they said, unless she unbinds herself, she's, like, on her last leg anyway. So, I mean, like, you know, girl could just have, like, a heart attack or something. You know?
That's another question. Do you think she's still actually bound by the three O's?
Oh, yeah. She is.
She's got the ageless face.
She's got the ageless face, so, I mean, like, that's QED.
Well, so does Varen, but Varen's been lying.
My theory on Varen is that she only unbound herself from one oath.
That's what I think happened to Catswain, too. She might have gotten unbound from one somehow.
Yeah, but I think that you don't get any unbinding effects unless you unbind yourself from all of them. So if you just unbind yourself from one, then you still have the other two. You know, so she's still, like, you know, on the brink of old age death right there. So,
mm-hmm.
What about Varen? What do you think about Varen? Think Varen will survive?
I think Varen will survive. I don't see Varen taking, like, a frontline kind of role. you know, unless she gets killed, you know, she might be, it would be really cool to kind of see her face off of Forsaken and kind of, you know, do like a final strike kind of deal. That'd be neat.
Do you have any theories on where Varen's disappeared to in Knife of Dreams?
Did she disappear in Knife of Dreams?
Did she disappear?
I thought she left Rand that note when they were at the manor house. She left him a note and said, "I've done all I can do here. I must be off. I have other things."
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I got to take. And of course, we sort of surmised that she went off to find the Horn of Valyr and bring it back to Man or something. But
oh well, that could be it. I actually don't. I have no clue because I have actually.
Yeah, she took her order and left. You know, she just split. So.
Well, right, but my problem is that I've actually only read Knife of Dreams once. I read it when it came out, right when everything was going insane, and I haven't read it since then. And I deliberately didn't reread it once I started the blog. Because,
yeah.
Like, you know, it's going to be a really interesting experience to come to that remembering virtually nothing about it.
Actually, every time I read it, I like it better. I didn't like it that much at first, but I'm just on my reread. I'm actually about halfway through it now, and I find I'm enjoying it far more this time than I did any of the previous times. I couldn't tell you why exactly, but
I think a lot of people really love Knife of Dreams because a lot of shit happens right in that book, and everyone is like saying, okay, the 11th book is like the redeeming book of RJ because he had the three books where virtually nothing happens or nothing seems to happen. And then finally the 11th book, there's action and the whole book flows quickly and runs. And a lot of people find it to be a favorite book just because of that. And I agree with that. I mean, it's full of action and full of things happening and moving along. And it's,
yeah, some plot lines actually got resolved.
Yeah.
Some plot lines actually finished. It's like, whoa, Fael got rescued. We resolved Aram. You know, he got offed right away. You know, a lot of things actually came to a conclusion, which is a first.
Yeah, well,
other than Matt and Tylan, you know.
Well, right, but I remember I really liked Night of Dreams, but I don't actually really remember a lot of the specifics because I did only read it once. So I'm really interested to see how I react to it when I come back to it. That'll be, along with that one and Path of Daggers are the two that I'm most interested to see what happens with the reread. You know, just because Path of Daggers is the one I hated the most, and then Knife of the Dreams is the one that I remember the least about. So it's going to be a really interesting experience, I think. But as far as the whole kind of the overall phenomenon of not killing people in Wheel of Time, I kind of waver back and forth on whether it's a flaw or not. In some ways, I kind of agree, yeah, it's kind of ridiculous that you're having this titanic epic battle of good and evil, and yet, like, no one dies, except for, like, you know, red shirts.
Yeah.
Because that seems kind of unrealistic. But on the other hand, it is actually kind of true to the genre, which is that, you know, like, how many of these different series have you read? You know, Tolkien himself, like, I remember, this is something I distinctly remember when Return of the King came out, the movie version, and I went and saw it with a friend of mine who had never read the books but really liked the movie. And so we went and saw Return of the King and, you know, blah, blah, and we got out, and I said, well, what did you think? And he said, well, you know, I'm really kind of disappointed. And I said, why? And he said, I thought more of them would die.
Yeah, they all lived pretty happily after, you know.
Yeah, and it's pretty much like none of the main cast really died. I mean, like, you know, basically the entire Fellowship survived except for Boromir, who died, like, way back in the first movie. You know,
yeah.
Like, from that point of view, I mean, like, even Tolkien wouldn't kill people off. It seems like Martin is kind of more the exception to the rule.
You know, and I understand Bilbo went off to the Grey Havens, but other than that, you know, pretty much nobody did.
And
yeah,
Brandon,
but that doesn't
count, because it's not like they died. It's like they got...
Yeah, right.
On voyage, you know, and, you know, waved, and, you know, everybody got to see, oh, look, they're playing golf now in the Grey Havens. It's not really the same thing, if you ask me. So, it does, is kind of my opinion, but it's kind of a time-honored tradition that nobody dies, you know. So on the one hand, it's kind of like, okay, well, that's kind of lame. But on the other hand, it's kind of like, okay, well, imagine the outrage if Nynaeve, or worse yet, Matt actually did get killed. I mean, like, all the fans would have, like, a seizure. So,
oh, yeah.
You know, I don't know. You know, it's kind of six of one, half a dozen of the other.
Yeah, on that topic, I actually think one of the things that RJ did is Min's character is really, it shows us who will live and who will die based on her viewings. Just because there are so many viewings of hers that are mentioned that have to happen after the last battle. Like, you know, the three girls sitting around the funeral bier of Rand, and, like, Rand is dead and three girls crying over him. So we
Point of order, that was actually in Nicola's viewing and not Min's.
That was right. Nicola's viewing?
Yeah, that was Nicola Treehill.
Yes. Three on the boat, and he who is dead yet lives. And, yes, right. I can quote that from memory.
Yes, indeed.
I thought Min also had a similar viewing of that.
Yeah, Min also has a similar viewing.
Well, she doesn't have one about a boat.
No, not about the boat, but about something about, like, a funeral shroud, I remember from
him.
Yes.
No, him laying on the bier, and then his face turns to paper or something like that.
There's another one that she has. There's a viewing, which I remember, that she has from Crown of Swords, which no one has ever explained, which no one still has any clue what it's about, which is that, see if I can remember the exact words, it says, a man lay dying on a narrow bed, and it was important that he not die. Yet outside, people raised voices of mourning and singing or something like that. And no, like, I still have no clue what the hell that's about.
And like, who was she looking at the time?
She wasn't. Actually, you know what? It might actually be in a green dream. It's not. I take that back. It's not a Min viewing. It's in a green dream. She has a dream. There's a man lying, dying in a narrow bed, and it's important that he not die. Yet people were outside, like, mourning and having flowers and singing. And to date, I have never had, and they've never given any clue what that's about, because she says it's a man. Whereas you'd think if it was Rand or somebody that she knew, that she would say it was Rand. You know?
Yeah.
So it's like, what the hell
Maybe
is that about? I have no idea.
Maybe it's
well, it also
you?
Kind of ties back in with one of the dreams Rand has really, really, really early on in Eye of the World, where he goes to what we later find out is Tarvalen, and as he's there, the people who are all around him are just singing for no apparent reason. And it
flowers.
Kind of brings up that parallel imagery.
Yeah, well,
is it possible that Rand is a dreamer too?
Yeah, it was when he was waiting, he was watching over Tam after he'd been healed, just before they get carried out of the Three Rivers by Morin.
I think they said that all of those dreams were kind of sent by Baal Zemon, though. So they weren't really his as such.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, because the whole Tarvalen thing was basically a big ploy to get him to stay away from there.
Yeah.
You know?
But there was a lot of foreshadowing in that, too. He wakes up with his side sore where the sword hilt was poking in, and it's exactly the same place where he gets the wound from Ishamael and Hoffman at the time and all that. It's kind of strange little section,
well,
really.
It's definitely really interesting to reread Eye of the World in particular after, you know, 11 books in, because you can see how much of it is there and yet how much of it is not, you know, like the stuff that only came later. So it's really interesting to kind of reread. Eye of the World was really interesting, and I actually kind of regret that I was started out with that breakneck pace and I really didn't spend as much time as I could have. But still, I think I managed to get it in there. But it's really kind of weird to read the first one, with this kind of perspective. So that's what I think.
Well, I guess sort of changing the topic a little bit, you mentioned that Matt was your favorite character, hands down. Do you have a favorite female character?
It's probably Nynaeve. Actually, I kind of regard, and I think I've said this in the blog before, but Nynaeve is, in a lot of ways, to me, the female version of Matt. I mean, obviously the parallels are not exact, but they have very similar patterns of thought. They're very similar in the ways that they are. They don't view themselves the way that other people view them. And it's very much, they talk a lot of in their heads. And if you see what's going on in their heads, you have a very different picture of them from someone who just sees them from the outside. And she just cracks me up. I mean, like, I just think she's hilarious because she's just so, like, she's so kind of retardedly clueless about herself in a lot of ways. And yet, you know, when the chips are down, she does her shit. And you know, if you want someone on your side when things go south, I mean, that's who you want. You know, that's who you want there. So that to me is, she's a really cool person. And, you know, I think there's also a little bit of self-identification there, you know. She's not got the best social skills, and she's not very sure of herself, and she's, you know, very insecure in a lot of ways, which is annoying, but it's also something that you can really identify with, you know.
Yeah, it's a little endearing, actually, when you get over some of the rough edges, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, and this is something that's been an ongoing point of contention between, you know, a lot of fans, I think, which is about, you know, is Nynaeve awesome or is she the most annoying character in the entire series? You know, and it's really interesting to me. She's fascinating to me because she is such a polarizing character and because she does evoke such different responses in people based on what they choose to take out of what she does and she thinks and she says, you know. The really good thing about Jordan, which a lot of people don't really manage to do, is that he's not afraid to make his characters flawed. And
yeah.
I think that that's a big failing of a lot of authors because they fall in love with their characters and they think their characters are fabulous, and they end up kind of almost becoming Mary Sues because they're perfect.
I was just thinking
they can do no wrong, and you know, everybody loves them, and they're completely lovable, and they never have a bad thought, and blah, blah, blah. Whereas Jordan's characters are like, you know what, they're rough. They do stupid shit. And they say stupid things, and they're prejudiced, and sometimes they're downright idiotic, and they do things that piss you off, you know?
You just reminded me of the scene in The Dragon Reborn where the Supergirls go into the herbalist woman, and Elaine asks the herbalist, what would you do about two girls who need to work together but are acting like cats in a sack or whatever? And the woman says, oh, I dunk their head in the wash basin or whatever.
Yeah, they come to me. I charge them a silver mark for it. That was Mother Gwenna, wasn't it?
Gwenna. Here. Yeah,
I just love that scene. It's just it really marks the flaws in these girls and that they need to realize that they have flaws. Like you put it in the blog, it's a self-realization moment.
Yeah, totally. Girl. And I think that's the really cool thing about it. It's annoying, but it's also kind of a really brave move on the author's part, which is that you are making heroes that you run the risk of a significant percentage of your readership hating, you know, because they do stupid things and they're not perfect, you know. But I think that makes them more real. If they were all just perfect all the time, then you'd be like, well, yawn. So it's a good choice. You know, because I've just read so many fantasy stories or books where the main character or the main characters, they never have a bad thought and they never do anything wrong. Or if they do something wrong, it's sort of wrong, but not really. And then they always just get fixed in the next chapter or whatever.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, I think Rand was perilously close to that for a while, you know.
Who, Rand?
Yeah, I think so.
Rand?
He was too kind of noble all the time. He never really had any bad thoughts. I mean, you know, he tried so hard. He was, even the other boys thought he was kind of a stick in the mud, you know.
He's an idiot. I mean, like, crazy, though. I mean, you can't get any more flawed than being insane.
Well, now, but I mean, in the very beginning, you know, he was such a little goody-good. Even, you know, even Matt and Taryn made some comments about he was, you know, kind of fun to be around when he wasn't going all serious on you, you know.
I don't know, though, because Rand has always particularly annoyed me because of his whole attitude about women, which is, and that's a particular, like, bugaboo of mine, which is that, you know, I was fiercely annoyed with him through most of the series at various times because I understand that you have this whole chivalry thing going on and whatever, but, you know, it's really insulting that you're not letting the maidens be who they say they are. And it's demeaning, you know.
But he still has that problem.
Well, I know, it's an ongoing problem. Again, that's what I'm saying about, I think that Rand, in a lot of ways, is a very flawed character. You know, and it may not be as obvious for someone who's, this is not their particular issue, but for me, the whole beating himself up about the women who have died because of him, I can understand it, but at the same time, I'm like, man, you know, go let them be people and not women. And, you know, that was my whole thing. Like, he doesn't beat himself up over the men who have died for him. You know,
no,
to me, that was, like, that was kind of an unacceptable double standard.
Matt's that way too. I mean, Matt's sitting there going grieving over about, you know, Matt's three. Oh my God, never again if I die for it. And I'm going, you know, these were three women who needed to be killed. Come on, would you just get over it? You know, he never thinks twice about any of the band that get killed. I'm
but
right.
Again, but again, it's the thing. It's their flawed characters, you know, and they are definitely products of their culture. And I think that while I find it annoying, I also have to give props to that it's also true to what the basic construction of their characters has been. Whether you look at it from kind of like a personal standpoint or a technical standpoint, it's a little different.
Yeah, but the funny thing is, this whole series, until Rand is introduced as the main hero, you have to take into perspective that this is a female-dominated world. I mean, I have been running the show for the past 3,000 years. Women have been in control, and it's really ridiculous that 3,000 years in, the Two Rivers is still the only male-dominated area where they see women as frail. It's kind of...
Well,
weird.
They don't, though.
No.
Yeah, but they see women as someone who needs protection from the men, by the men, which is ridiculous in a world which is very heavily dominated by women.
But it's not only the Two Rivers that has that attitude. I mean, all of the Borderlands have that
attitude
that any man should give his life before a woman's.
Yeah, they definitely have that in the Borderlands. It's one of the things that I sort of talk about, but I probably should get into more at some point, which is about that there is a very weird kind of double standard going on there, which is that it's that women have a lot of authority in kind of civil situations in a lot of the societies in Randland, but they don't, I mean, even in, you know, Saldea or things like that, it's like the Aiel are basically the only society still in all of Randland that accept women into their fighting forces.
That's not true.
I mean, like, you know.
No, the Shanchen.
Yeah.
Oh, the Shanchen, you're right. All right. So, okay, I'll give you that. But, you know, they have their own problems. They've got their own separate issues, but, you know, in Randland proper, you know, not Shanshan, but, like, really, they talk about it when Elaine starts forming her guard with the women.
Right,
the
Queen's guard, yeah.
And it's, like, scandalous, and they're all like, oh, la, la. And this is a country which, you know, has ironclad tradition that only a woman can rule them. But, and yet, there's still this kind of outcry, almost, about having women serving in a fighting capacity. So it's a really interesting, weird, kind of funky double standard going on there, which, you know, I admit is still better than the double standard we have in the real world. But it's a very interesting kind of thing, and it's very interesting to speculate whether or not it's a deliberate double standard on Robert Jordan's part, or if it's kind of almost an unconscious thing. You know, because Jordan can't avoid any more than the rest of us being influenced by the culture that he grew up in. You know, so it's an interesting thing to speculate about it, like how much of it was deliberate and how much of it wasn't.
Well, I thought Brandon had some good insights into that when we did the interview with him. I didn't get, and I have to agree with him, I don't get so much to this female-dominated societies, a lot of it, as that there are just a lot of really strong female characters, you know, in the world. And I don't really see a lot of them being female-dominated as far as cultures. I mean, look at China, it's not female-dominated at all. Or Alien, any of those.
Mm.
Not really, no. And certainly not Tyr.
No, and the Aes Sedai don't really control everything. They just control the White Tower. They just go around meddling in everything. They really don't control much. I mean, they think they do, but they really don't.
Like, the funny thing is it's introduced in the first and second book that even kings bow before the Amerlin seat. The Amerlin seat is like the President of the United States. It's the king of the world is the Amerlin seat. And well, it sort of falls from grace as soon as the Shadow Rising happens and the split happens. And then, like, nobody cares about the Aes Sedai anymore. They have their own strife going on. But for the majority of the beginning of the book, like, the Aes Sedai and the Amyrlin Seed are, they are so high above everyone else. They play by their own rules. They have their own game going. They're so far above us.
I don't think that has anything to do with them being women. I think it has to do with them being the only ones who still wield magical power, basically.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if there were still male Aes Sedai around, then it would still be the same thing. It's one of those things where it's a chicken or the egg kind of question. The fact is that she can call down lightning on anybody she doesn't like. So, you know, it's one of those unfortunate truths that might makes right. And the fact that, you know, they happen to all be women is actually kind of incidental.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So it's just kind of a result of what happened because of, you know, the taint and all that, blah, blah, blah. So,
yeah.
I don't know. This is really interesting because it's very subjective, depending on how you choose to look at it, which is why we can talk about it for hours.
Hours, days, weeks. Months.
I know it's probably getting kind of late for you. I don't know if you're getting tired or if you want to go on for a little longer.
Do you have any
final comments or what? I mean, I'm game if you are, but I don't want to keep you up all night either.
I do actually have to finish the blog.
Okay. We don't want to be the ones that keep you from hitting your deadline. So,
do you have any final thoughts? Just that I feel very lucky that I got to do all these things, you know, regarding the Wheel of Time, and that I think it's been a really great experience. I mean, you know, it's just, you know, cliche, but it's seriously, it has been fascinating to kind of see not just, you know, what I come up with, but, you know, what other people come up with in response. And it's the kind of the new, how many different iterations of communities can be formed around the Wheel of Time. And, you know, every single time, it's always just this really strong response. So I think that, if nothing else, that really speaks strongly to the strength of the material, you know, the strength of the source. So it'll be really interesting to see what happens. As far as future plans for the vlog, you know, obviously we're going to keep going. But I warned Brandon at JordanCon that, so you do know that I'm going to be recapping your books too, right? And so that'll be really interesting to see what happens, you know, and I plan to, you know, kind of do a whole thing where when the book comes out, I'm going to be talking about what I think of it and everything like that. So I think it's going to be really cool, you know.
Yeah.
And I know you guys, you're affiliated with Dragonmount, and it's up on the website at the FAQ, but, you know, Dragonmount has actually taken over the Wheel of Time FAQ. And it's still kind of in the planning stages right now. They're still kind of working on it, but there is definitely going to be an updated version of the Wheel of Time FAQ. I can't do it, obviously, because I got too much to do with the blog.
You're a little busy.
I'm a little busy these days. I got a little
What, you mean you don't have time to update this little tiny little FAQ?
But Asen Denzel and Jennifer Liang are actually kind of spearheading in the whole thing, and they are working on it. And I haven't actually talked to either of them in a while, so I don't know what the status is of it. But, you know, I'm still involved with it, and once they kind of get it going, I'm going to be, you know, kind of giving them, I don't know, advice or something. I don't know exactly. the capacity is like, yes, you should move that comma over there. It is still a live document as far as I'm concerned, and it is going to get updated. Just a question of getting it all up there, because like I said, it is a fairly titanic undertaking. And there's a whole lot of crap that goes into it, so we'll see what ends up happening. It is definitely not dead. Long live the facts, right?
Yeah,
definitely a good thing to hear.
It's going to get really interesting over at Tor as the release date approaches.
Uh-huh.
So everyone should definitely keep an eye out. You know, they're going to be doing some other auxiliary stuff, which I am sort of only vaguely privy to. But there's going to be, like, a lot of cool stuff going on, so everybody should keep an eye on it, because it's going to be really cool. If you guys have any more questions for me, I'd be happy to answer them. You know, I can talk a blue streak, so, you know.
one last question for you. What was your opinion on the cover for The Gathering Storm?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I have...
Pretty much the answer I expected.
Yeah, and you know, I'm sorry. I can't endorse the American covers of Wheel of Time. Actually, the only one that I really liked, and I probably really should mention on the blog, is my favorite cover, the one that I think is the least offensive, is actually the one that I'm on now, which is The Fires of Heaven.
I was actually thinking that earlier as I was looking at it. It actually is the nicest cover, I think.
It is a nice discovery. Everyone's in proportion, and they're not doing crazy calisthenics, and there's not trollocs with, you know, animal-shaped helmets on men's heads.
There is one.
Oh, there is?
On the spine. Yeah, on the spine.
Why'd you have to ruin it, man?
I'm sorry.
Oh, man.
Back.
That's sort of like the UK cover. I think it's UK for the Gathering Storm, where it just has these looming clouds and the symbol and everything. It's sort of like that one.
I like
UK
that one,
covers
too.
Are always cooler. Because, you know, the British are just cooler than we are, and we should just admit it.
Yeah.
We should never have written that document back in 1776.
Well, we shouldn't have written, you know, put it in such an obnoxious font, really.
Yeah.
Is the problem.
Oh, my God. That's too funny. I still drink tea, for God's sake, you know.
There you go. I don't.
Oh, gosh. Well, anyway, I suppose we shouldn't keep you any longer, but we're really excited that you came, and we had a lot of fun, and you're welcome back anytime you want. Let us know.
We'd definitely like to thank you for taking the time and chatting with us.
Oh, I had fun. I enjoyed it. Thanks for having me, guys.
Love having you as well.
Thanks again, Lee.
Bye, Lee. Thank you.
Bye.
We'd like to thank Lee Butler again for coming on and talking with us. You can, of course, check out the things she is most associated with, that being the Wheel of Time FAQ, which is online at steelypips, that's steelypips, .org/WOTFAQ. And it's just a very exhaustive list of frequently asked questions that are wonderfully discussed that is just been taken very recently under the wings of Dragon Mount and Tarvalon. We also would like to have everyone go and check out Lee's reread of The Wheel of Time, which you can find for searching for Wheel of Time on Tor's website at tor.com.
Yeah, it was great having Lee come on with us, and we hope to have her back again. And I guess we should just basically wrap up this episode of the Fourth Age podcast. And we want to thank everybody for coming, Lee Butler especially, and Andrew, Amir, Jesse, thank you for being here. And I am, of course, Virginia. We always enjoy getting feedback from the fans, and we do have a number of episodes where we have voicemails on. Unfortunately, a lot of them are still in editing. I know that's our constant, unfortunately, the truth. But we do enjoy hearing from you. We listen to every voicemail. We read every email, and we try to respond to as many emails as we can. And eventually, everything will get on the show, and you will hear it. So please continue to write us or voicemail us. And there are a number of ways that you can reach the Fourth Age, and Andrew will tell us a few of them.
You can, of course, always leave us a voicemail at 1-888-333-7690. The voicemails are always a great way to hear what other people are thinking most directly. We get tons out of just, you know, being able to listen through and going, oh, okay, well, you know, being able to listen to the crazy theories as they come in, or, you know, hear someone else's opinion other than our own.
Of course, should any of you wish to contact us in any other way but email, we are available on MySpace, Facebook, and Twitter. Just look for the Fourth Age podcast, and we have a MySpace page under the Fourth Age. We have a Facebook group with many followers, and of course on Twitter. Just look for the Fourth Age podcast. And thanks again, all of you, for listening, and we'll be back next time.
Again, thanks everybody for listening. This is Virginia saying, may the light illumine you for all the days that we have left. How's that for cheerful?
This is Jesse saying goodbye, and thank you for listening. It has been a pleasure as always, and once again, a special thank you to Lee Butler for joining us on this special edition.
Absolutely.
And for myself, Andrew Gellos, and everyone here at the Fourth Age, Suravananto Manshima, Taishite.
Asmodian did what?
Oh, no. No. Not Asmodian. No. Oh, no. You. No.
And if you haven't gotten to Shadow Rising and you don't know who Asmodian is...
Press 1. If you've never heard of Asmodian, press 2. If you don't care who killed Asmodian, press 3.
If you don't know who the Forsaken are, you really, really come to this prematurely.
Yeah.